Hello, and welcome back to the Self-Healer Soundboard. Today's episode was inspired by this month's topic in Self-Healer Circle, our global membership community, where we are exploring forgiveness. And time again, many members were asking about the topic of self-forgiveness. So we thought we would dedicate an entire episode diving into that now.
Just yesterday, I led a workshop in Self-Healer Circle specifically on self-forgiveness. And intentionally, these topics of forgiveness and self-forgiveness were put into a cluster of our heart consciousness courses. So we started with a macro conversation around just what forgiveness is and the impact that forgiveness or not forgiving has on our physical selves, on our hearts, our bodies, and therefore our minds, our thoughts, how we express ourselves in the world, how we show up in our relationships. And anytime we're talking about any concept or topic, there is always a path immediately led back to self, how to apply and integrate that with self. And forgiveness was no different. Many of us think first of forgiveness as an act that involves another. Forgiveness is something that we give to another, when in fact, forgiveness is actually a gift that we give to ourselves and our physical selves, our well-being, our hearts, our own actual physiological health. So today we're going to specifically talk about self-forgiveness. Before we can even think about forgiving another or the conversation about involving another person in forgiveness, let's talk about what it's like to actually forgive ourselves, to be able to go through the experience of self-forgiveness so that we actually then can extend that to another. Because if we cannot first give something to ourselves and embody it ourselves, we are actually unable to give it to another, no matter how much we may want or desire to.
As I imagine, the many of us who struggle with the practice of self-forgiveness are aware this is a practice, meaning we could be given all of the information about how forgiveness is helpful for our own hearts, for the hearts of others, for our relationships, though until we really engage in the practice of identifying, allowing, accepting, and ultimately releasing any and all of those angry, those judgmental, those critical, or those otherwise upsetting thoughts that so many of us have about ourselves, usually attached to past actions or inactions that many of us carry with us, embodied in our mind and bodies for a lifetime. So this is, again, really honoring the practice of making those daily choices to become present to the fact that we might believe we need forgiveness for whatever it is, so that we can actually then release and allow ourselves to engage or embody the peace that comes with forgiveness itself.
And a willingness. I think you can't forgive or choose to forgive yourself if you're unwilling. Much like when we begin healing or we make change in our lives, what's the first thing most of us want? We want to run and wave a magic wand and give that same change and transformation and healing to all of the people around us, when reality is they too have to be willing. It has to be a willingness and an intention that comes from your own internal inner guidance and intuition, a soul choice, if you will, or from your heart. So in this belief, I love that you're saying that, a belief that, you know, I'm worthy of forgiving. Many of us who have, you know, done something or harmed another or hurt another to a point where we are shaming ourselves, we are guilty, we do have that resentment. You know, we might even be guilty or resentful or angry about the consequences or the result of whatever it was that our action was. Allow that to be. It is, in fact, a process that is going to take practice and revisiting, actually feeling and going through the steps of this self-forgiveness so that we can even create space from ourselves and the event that happened, the feelings that we feel from it, and what we've learned from it so that we can make it an experience that produces wisdom, that produces feedback and information for us to make more aligned choices and responses in the future to really bring forth our true essence and our authentic divine selves into the world.
I love this distinction you're making here, Jenna, between kind of our tendency or noticing the distinction between our tendency to engage in emotional addiction cycles and that shift of using what very real happened, as you say, we can't unhappen it, and taking the wisdom from it so that we can actually change our actions into the future. Because for me, I see that kind of blurred line between those two, because one of the areas I continue to revisit oftentimes in emotional addiction cycles where I'm stressed, feeling bad about myself, I can call to mind, and it wasn't just one, the several relationships, whether it was romantic or even friendships that in the past I've ghosted, I've just left when they stopped being aligned with me for whatever reason. And a lot of this was around early stages of my healing journey. I just stopped contacting or responding to contact from certain people. And of course, in the context of romantic partnerships, if I began dating someone and I was aware my feelings weren't there, but maybe theirs were, instead of just telling them that I wasn't aligned in that moment for a romantic relationship, I just got the heck out of there and said nothing. And while now, right, looking back, I can understand all of that ghosting behavior, as hurtful as I imagine it was for those other people, was really indicative of not of them at all, of my inability to acknowledge these relationships not being in alignment, of my inability to even know where my alignment was, let alone stand in that space and speak it to someone else, whether it's in a friendship or in a romantic partnership. So the shift into wisdom is, yes, that did happen. And that was a byproduct of me not knowing myself, of me not knowing how to advocate for myself, all coming, again, out of protective behaviors learned in my own childhood. People pleasing became the way, right? Not saying things to upset people. So now when I have something upsetting to say to someone, what did I do? I left because I didn't have the tools how. Though in moments, I could call to mind all of the people, some of them decades old, relationships I haven't even had contact with in so long, yet I could hold myself accountable in shame in those moments of emotional addiction, right? Kind of leaning too much into what I've done in the past and not enough into, I've learned. I now am very advocating for myself. I'm able to speak up a bit more when things aren't aligned. So chances are I'm not going to find myself so entrenched in a relationship that I need to ghost to get out sometime later, because all along the way, I'm honoring my boundaries and I'm speaking up for my needs so that relationships can become aligned or there's separation and I can communicate much more directly at an earlier time.
If you're watching this, the YouTube video on our Self-Healer Soundboard YouTube channel of these video episodes, which do have closed captions if you're wanting to read these episodes instead, I was smiling and giggling just as Nicole stopped talking there, because you learn something new about your partners every day. And it's always such an interesting experience when you learn new things about your partner on a public podcast. Granted, we're not live at the moment, but we'll keep this. It's just so interesting to, and I can picture that past version of you doing that. I appreciate you sharing that and appreciate you looping in that emotional addiction cycle again. And emotional addiction, we actually, as we're recording this, we have an episode out that just released this week, episode 96, Healing from Emotional Addiction, that is related directly to our workbook, How to Meet Yourself. And very quickly, emotional addiction, for those of you who don't know, it's the body's physiological response actually staying stuck in the embodiment of these feelings, like that shame, anger, resentment. That energy, or that emotion, I should say, is energy in motion. Those feelings are in your body going through a process, and we get looped into them. We create or hook onto thoughts that cause the response in our body of this shame, this anger, this resentment, and vice versa. It just goes in this nice continual loop of emotional addiction that, yes, doesn't, you know, feel good or peaceful or calming or regulating. However, in some ways, it feels regulating in the sense that it relates to the chaos and dysfunction that we once learned was regulation itself. And our body stays stuck there. So when we talk about forgiveness, while no one has to forgive, forgiveness, self-forgiveness, these are choices that we make for ourselves. And when we choose not to forgive, or we choose to look away, or we give ourselves, this came up in our Self-Healer Circle membership portal, a conversation around that sort of surface level forgiveness, where you know, you can just tell yourself you forgive yourself about something. And then a couple of months down the road, you're an imploding volcano about it, or an exploding volcano, reacting to all of this resentment that's still there, all of this emotion, energy in motion that is literally in your physical being, your physical body, erupting and coming forth. Because an act, a process, the embodiment of actual forgiveness and self-forgiveness genuinely did not take place. Because if it had, then that identification of those feelings from that event, the awareness would have been there. The actual process of feeling those feelings, which means actually connecting to the pain, connecting to the shame, taking responsibility and accountability for it. That means quite literally sitting and being with the physical discomfort of our own resentment and anger towards self, and also the connection to our own painful and deeper wounds that were part of the root cause that created the situation that you are now choosing to or not forgive yourself for. So when we give that surface level forgiveness or we brush by it, our body is saying a different story. Our mind might have made up a story that we've forgiven, but our body didn't. Our body is stuck in that emotional addiction. It is repeating the sensations and the embodiment of that shame. When that happens, there's no room and no space for it to allow in feelings of forgiveness, of acceptance, of compassion, of allowing that reflection and that gained wisdom, which can actually help move our lives forward in alignment to our true nature.
I'm really happy you brought up resentment and the role that that can often play. And you know what resentment really is the accumulation of anger that many of us have gathered over a lifetime of unmet needs, of boundary violations. Because my process of self-forgiveness is a bit savvy. When saying that to say that I oftentimes don't even, or I have a conditioned habit, I should say, of not standing in that space of personal responsibility, of doing instead the opposite, which I could call externalizing or projecting responsibility outward. And I can use a prime example from just last week that really illustrates this. And I woke up, there's been a couple weeks now where I've been struggling to sleep through the night. I've been waking up in the middle of the night. So, you know, my resources are low. When we're talking about our mind and body, we understand that sleep and our ability to rest plays an important role in us having the ability, having our resources to tolerate stress the next day. So to put it short and simple, when I'm not sleeping well, I notice I can become agitated. It's even more important when I'm not sleeping well at night to make sure that I'm caring for myself during the day. Yet at the same time, those are the moments where I'm likely not to care for myself. And the example I want to give is I woke up one morning, I was feeling a bit agitated after not sleeping for several nights. And we were going about, the three of us living together, going about our mornings. And I was watching Lolly, one of our partners outside, having her morning. And I was watching somewhat you, Jenna, kind of going about what you needed to do in your morning. And I was, in my mind's eye, feeling not only stressed out and overwhelmed, but holding myself to task with all of these obligations outside of myself. I had to feed the cats. I had to do everything for everyone else. Meanwhile, I'm looking, glaring, leering, right, at the two of you, taking time for yourself. And what I'm feeling actually is agitated, not with me, with you. I'm feeling resentful. I'm feeling even angry. How are they out there? And I'm using this example because really in that moment, what I was upset with was not anyone around me. I was upset with myself, with my own ability to create boundaries around how I spent my time that morning, with my own inability to take care of myself, regardless of what was or wasn't happening around me. That's what I was really upset with. So the process of forgiveness, the embodied process, would have meant becoming aware, right, of all of that, that I'm not upset with anyone else. I'm upset with me. I'm upset with this unrealistic expectation that I put on myself that I take care of the world even when my resources are low. And in reality, I need to create space to take care of myself. But I wanted to use that example because I imagine many of you, you know, are resonating with this, which we don't even get to the process of forgiving ourselves if we can't yet take responsibility. And that habit that I've described of externalizing for me goes so deep. I would talk to you really often early on in my healing journey. I would share with Jenna that I went through this, I would call it like a boot camp of radical responsibility, because I was so aware that my go-to tendency when anything was upsetting me was to find the external cause for upset. And in reality, what I've learned more often than not, those moments, I'm not actually upset with the world around me. I'm upset with myself. And one might even say, deserving of the process of forgiving myself for that upset, for whatever I did or didn't do, whatever expectation I met or didn't meet, and just allowing myself, right, to accept, to become present to, and to be with whatever I feel about what is so that I can actually release that. But again, that only becomes possible if I first take that responsibility.
Was this the cat food morning?
Was this the cat food morning? Possibly. There's a couple mornings.
Every morning is a cat food morning. I noticed the same thing. And especially in times too, I noticed my little codependency parts come out to play. When in the morning, I will be watching you and then Lolly each doing their thing. And I'll know that what I actually want and am craving is space by myself, time by myself, all the things that I used to do before then. I have partners and a life and business and so many things going on. So I know that I do love and thrive in that alone time and solace. But then when I'm around partners or around people I love, I sometimes am just like a koala. Like I want to attach myself. I want to be next to them. So for me, it was a little different because it wasn't a projection of, oh, seeing what you guys were doing for yourselves. It was watching me want to koala attach myself to both you and Lolly or either or, and negating the fact that I actually needed to koala attach myself to my own heart and my own well-being and spend my time. But I noticed too then in that reflection, what I learned from that, like that doesn't feel good. That's what happened. I'm outsourcing myself and attaching myself to other people to really betray and dishonor my own time that I need to and want to be with myself. That's what happened. It feels depleting. It's exhausting, honestly, because the whole time in my head, it's like, Jenny, you know, you need to be doing something else. Like it quite literally is just, I don't know, like this mean girl up in my mind actively telling me that what I'm doing is wrong. I'm aware that I'm betraying myself. But then this other part is coming out saying, no, you want the love. You're with your partners. It's okay. So it's this exhausting, constant verbal match in my mind. And all of those conversations and thoughts that are happening back and forth are all sending messages and signals to my body and creating an actual physiological response in my body, in my nervous system. It is embodying all of those feelings of that self-shaming or that betrayal or just that anger or resentment at myself. So in those moments, even as they're happening, I can begin to, well, as they're happening now with practice, I can begin to notice all of the what's happening, how I'm feeling. I can hear and identify the voices, and I can see, I can learn something really valuable about myself. I might have already known it, but now this is just like extra driving it home. When you are feeling low on resources, or maybe there's something uncomfortable within that, and I'm speaking to myself right now, like when you, Jenna, are low on your resources, or there's maybe some grief or something within that you're needing to tap into or something that's there, notice when you then go start to koala yourself to other people, because usually that codependency conditioning for me comes out to play when I'm avoiding something internally. There's nothing good, bad, or wrong about that. I think the awareness of that is actually incredibly empowering, because now I can forgive myself for those moments and release those moments that I did do that. I can see that pattern about myself. I can forgive that. And in learning this about myself, I have more wisdom now and have literally in that learning created new neural circuits. I've actually imprinted on my mind now this new awareness that I've had. And my brain is going to, with practice, start to notice and identify that pattern oh, I'm noticing this codependency coming out to play. Okay, let's note that. We've learned that that starts to happen for you when there's something that you're avoiding. With each opportunity of forgiveness or self-forgiveness, there's something to be learned there. There is a wisdom there, which I truly believe is why the act itself happened in the first place. It is our human nature to make mistakes, to evolve, to learn from things, to find our alignment. That's how we come home to ourselves. That's how we create lives in alignment with our true nature and our heart. It's not by doing nothing. It's by doing lots of things with conscious awareness and reflection, and then learning the wisdom that was there in that experience or event, which I think is why it happened in the first place. We have to go through the life experience with a conscious awareness and a willingness to feel all of the emotions, not just some, but all of the human emotions that come with a lived experience, and then allow ourselves to pull away some wisdom from it.
Speaking of wisdom, one of the most valuable pieces of wisdom that I've gained from my whole journey in recovery of codependency that I'm definitely still on myself is how important it is to honor myself, to create that space for me to have limits, for me to have a being that is me within my relationships. And interestingly enough, as I, you know, began to create new boundaries and to honor myself in my relationships, there's a really pivotal moment around my mom's death in particular that still continues to come up for me, pinging moment, needed self-forgiveness, or a moment where I carry a lot of guilt. And as my mom was declining, right, I was, you know, in a healing portion of my journey. Here I was honoring what I wanted and what I needed, even within the context of these family relationships, where for me, historically, it had been the most difficult. I was always at the ready when there was ever a family issue. So it was really interesting for me to navigate those couple month period of time where we weren't really sure kind of what my mom's prognosis would be, how much longer it would be. And meanwhile, I was navigating everything I had going on professionally, personally, trying to navigate what was or wasn't happening with my mom, doing it so across the country. And the bottom line was I didn't make it home in time, and my mom died without me seeing or having a final visit with her. And that is a moment where I still do at times, you know, carry guilt. I call it to mind. I beat myself up. I, you know, hold myself accountable. I should have been there. It didn't matter what else was happening. I should have been there. I should have somehow known she was going to go at that moment. And the reality of it was quite unexpected. The hospice nurses didn't even know. We literally got a call the morning of and I was on a plane, but neither here nor there. I still, again, had this expectation that I had this inner knowing and I rearranged my life and I be home in time, all impossibilities. Though interestingly enough, right, this moment in time that I'm holding myself guilty for, it actually was so symbolic of my presence to me, of the fact that I wasn't living in self-betrayal as my automatic go-to anymore, that I was actually hitting pause and creating intentional moments where I was factoring myself in. And my choice to not make it home in time, which wasn't even a choice, it was just how circumstances unfolded. I don't have to hold all of the responsibility for that having happened, though it is so close to the surface. And I can go down that spiral, not even of guilt, where I can even feel shameful, right? I can make that choice to mean something about this terrible daughter that I've tried to avoid being my whole life. And it's just who I am at my core, right? None of that is helpful. Nothing that happened with my mom was in my control. I didn't get home in time to see her. I have a spiritual belief system, though, that, you know, does affirm that I do have moments of communication with her. So I rest in my assurance of that, though. That for me, you know, still can come up, and my choice is, do I hook right on that guilt, or do I just allow in? Yeah, it was unfortunate. It did suck. I don't know what it would have been like to see her one last time. This is what happened. And I can leave myself off the hook, knowing that I was doing the best I could with the information that I had to also be caring for myself in those moments.
That story that comes up, that I'm such a horrible person story that I think so many of us can relate to, that's that opportunity to intercept. It's not helpful to have that story, though it's also not wrong. It is very much a part of our human experience. And it comes from a broken heart. Like it comes from pain and assigning all that blame to ourselves, because then our mind has a way to isolate it and in its mind, control it and resolve it, which really means shove it down into the tissues and cells of our body for a later eruption or inflammation, disease, dysfunction, etc. It's human nature to spend time replaying those tapes and being in that story about ourselves. And when that happens, when you notice that, this is the key, without noticing, without awareness, without this witnessing, you can't do any of this work. So when you start to notice that already playing story in your head of I'm such a horrible person, that's the moment to connect to that learned wisdom. What is it that you learned? Intercept it right there. Nicole can have that story that, you know, yeah, I'm such a horrible person. I didn't go home and say goodbye to my mother for the last time before she died. But what did she just share that she learned about herself? This beautiful empowerment and awareness that she was honoring herself. You were honoring you, your own boundaries, your own healing, your own growth from a dysfunctional system that is the conditioning from which you came. And now you're out here as you in the world, carving and creating an entirely new path. That's not easy, especially when the people we love from that initial source of that conditioning and dysfunction are dying, have cancer, are on their deathbed. These are very, as you can see, if you're watching the video, I know Nicole's tears in her eyes right now as she was sharing, I had tears in my eyes. They're very painful human experiences. However, there is so much like an excavation of the soul and of the heart, like a true up leveling of your soul here on this earth plane, when you can be with and see all of that heartbreak and still see where you've learned from yourself. You know what? I really honored myself. I honored myself and I honored my well-being and I honored my heart so that I don't repeat the same cycles of conditioning and dysfunctioning so that I actually get to be the one that breaks the cycles. Now, we don't have children, but if we did, they wouldn't go through the same experience that any of us here did.
I appreciate, I got choked up when you were affirming and acknowledging me, Jenna. And very interestingly enough, that just popped into mind. And I felt like I wanted to share it here, which is that in that moment, I have my mom to thank too. Because actually several years ago now, gosh, decades even, one of my mom's brothers, whom she was very close to, my mom has two older brothers and the three of them, much like actually your childhood, in absence of having, you know, really any presence of their parents, the three of them really bonded together. And long story short, after a very tragic accident, when one of my uncles was up in age, he ended up after being hospitalized quadriplegic for about a year, ended up being at the end of his life. We all got a call to come in as a family. My mom, my dad, my sister, myself, my brother. And we were all in the room and my other uncle, his other brother at the time. So we're all sitting in the room and it was nearing the end of his life and the nurses were there and were letting us know. And I remember I was sitting in that room and I was starting to feel really uncomfortable. I was young or younger. I was in my early 20s, I think it was. And I was very uncomfortable with death. I've been uncomfortable and had a fear of death for as long as I can remember. Then seeing, you know, my uncle, and it was an overwhelming experience for me. So I'm sharing that to say, as I'm sitting in the room, I happen to look over and I catch my mom's eye, and she's obviously very devastated with the whole experience. And the better part of that year was very difficult for her since he became sick or fell the first time. And anyway, so she was sitting there in a near stage of breakdown and happened to see me catch her eye and mouth to me, I don't want to be here. And I mouthed back to her, you know, that was okay. And then if she, you know, that it would be okay if she were to want to leave. And she acknowledged that she did. And I took that as my invitation to leave right along with her. I wasn't feeling comfortable and I could be much more of a support in the separate room holding my mom's hand. But sharing that to say, right, in that moment, so interestingly, my mom honored herself. You know, here is her brother, the person she was closest to, right? We have all these expectations that we should be at someone's bedside. And the reality of it was my mom gave me a gift in that moment. she was actually able to stand in her own presence and say, this is too much for me, and take leave and honor herself in that moment. And that moment sticks to me and probably was subconsciously in my mind when I was making the decisions that I was making along the way to honor myself. And just going back to the idea of control that you brought into it, because I play scenarios, right? Well, what was I imagining would be so different if I did make it home in time? And I think a lot of us, what we're imagining is something different, right? Her death would have somehow felt different. I would have had this, you know, reparative moment where in my mom's, you know, ending days, that wasn't possible. My mom was so cognitively gone. There wasn't likely going to be that moment of clarity that we're all, you know, imagining or fantasizing we're going to get. So again, I think a lot of the time when we hold ourselves accountable, we're not holding ourselves accountable for a reality. We're holding ourselves accountable for an imagination that likely wouldn't even be the case at all. So going back to that moment with my mom in the room when her brother was dying really empowered me then to, and all of the work that I did in decades that followed, right, in creating that space for myself. While it was difficult, I was still grieving, whether or not I was there or here or wherever I was. I am still grieving my mom. And for me, again, honoring myself, just thank you, Jenna, for affirming that. Because again, there is that still little child that feels like a terrible person, like I would have, could have done, affected some change, felt differently, helped my mom in some way, when the reality of it is, none of that might have been true.
And the child that feels like a terrible person, that's an actual little child within you, within all of us, that needs to be soothed. It needs to be acknowledged. That is literally that step of feeling those feelings. When Nicole says that, you're articulating and identifying, you know, you might even visualize, for those of you listening, the visual of an actual, like, you know, a child within you or a part of yourself. You could see it as like swirling energy, or maybe you actually see it as another human or a shadow. All of these different parts that make us up. That's such a natural flow for Nicole to acknowledge it in that way. So yeah, there's a little girl in me that feels shameful. Well, we can look at that in a tangible way. That's an actual part of us that needs acknowledging and soothing. And in order to soothe that part of us, we have to do the painful, uncomfortable thing of actually feeling the shame and the hurt and the heartache that needs soothing, which is the part that many of us scoot right past, or even subconsciously, we want to scoot right past, and we'll go through acts of, oh, yeah, I'll forgive myself because I want to release it. And then a few months later, you notice all these feelings or shame or guilt, whatever it may be, is all still there. And it's still there. And you're noticing it as the feeling, because it's the feeling that was never actually processed or addressed. We never allowed it to be identified and accepted in a space of nurture and of safety. And I do truly believe it is by divine design that you didn't see your mom that last time. And I know that was the first thing that you shared with me when you were even on the flight there. And when you got there, you knew in the air, you had a knowing, you know, your body knew before the level of consciousness of your mind could tap into the wavelength. We do have this deep internal knowing in our bodies. That's why I love that quote. There's more wisdom in your body than in your deepest philosophy or your greatest philosophy. It's all here in a very felt way. And your body could feel and knew that inherent wisdom that she had passed. And there was also an immediate solace that came from you in such a divine knowing way that your mom wanted it that way.
I was going to offer that. I actually think that back to that room, you know, with my uncle, I do think in a way that my mom was honoring that for me and was, you know, gifting me that and didn't feel, you know, any type of way about me not being there, you know, felt just as connected to my soul and my spirit. And I do believe that that was her parting gesture for me, was not to, you know, create or have her be a part of that discomfort.
This is exactly what I mean when I say divine design. I think it was your mother's soul's knowing, her heart's knowing, that is what created all of the factors at play that had everything play out that they did, so much so that We now have a podcast episode and conversations and these events to recall and learn from and articulate and share outward internationally to an entire world so that we can find shared resonance in our hearts to lead our own individual hearts and our collective hearts down a path of healing. Now, for those of you who have been tuning in with us for a little bit, know that just 6 months, I think, after your mother died in May of 2021, my brother Jake died in November 2021. And 2 months prior to his death in September, which was just 4 months after your mom died, and really just a couple days before your birthday too, it was like, I think September 13th or something, I got a phone call that Jake had overdosed and he was unconscious and he was in the hospital and then ended up being in the hospital for 2 weeks with a double pneumonia. Whew. You can hear the tears. You could probably see them too. So what that lump in my throat is and those tears, this is still an embedded physiological feeling of, yes, that little girl in me that still carries in me some guilt and some shame. Even though I can objectively see the situation now and I have learned from it, there's still emotion to process. There's still grief there. That's what that quiver in my voice is and that lump in my throat. I can see it all from a higher vantage point now, but there is still grief in my body and that's okay. I allow it to be acknowledged and I allow it to process and express itself safely. And every time I do, it does feel like I'm sort of emptying this cup of everything that I've taken on and held on to, the safeness that I have found in this emotional addiction cycle of, it's your fault your brother died, you didn't pick up his phone call, it's your fault that he overdosed. All of those thoughts, I get to release that when I actually allow myself to feel and process. So when he overdosed in September, the day before he overdosed, I was sitting on the couch. I remember I was specifically next to Lolly. I think you were in the kitchen because I can like see you through the hallway of our kitchen into our little like breakfast area. And Jake called my phone and I didn't have resources at this time. I was in the midst of my own healing. We had just moved to Arizona a month or two prior. I couldn't connect back with Jake. It was a boundary I put up for my own self, for my own well-being, and for my own heart. And I remember specifically picking up my phone and seeing incoming call from Jake. And I either hit deny or I just let it play out. And I didn't get back to Jake. Now, Jake and I had been texting for a couple of days prior to that, him wanting to connect and, you know, wanting to chat. In the back of my mind, I was concerned that he was just going to ask me for money again. So I kind of avoided it and put it off. And all of my little spidey sense kept coming up too that I knew you have to set some boundaries here. Like this is a slippery slope that does seem like he's getting back into addiction. And that had been very far removed for me, at least, you know, 7-8 years removed, where it was blindsiding, to say the least, that he overdosed. And those couple days prior to when he had been wanting to connect, I could feel in my body, you know, I could feel a heaviness on my own and what I was going through. But what I was going through was also energetically a direct connection to the unraveling and really the pain that he also was going through that I wasn't necessarily aware of the details of, but thousands of miles away in New York. So when I hit deny on that call and knew that he had been wanting to connect or trying to talk over the last week, but we couldn't get a hold of each other. And then less than 12 hours later, I wake up to a text that he's unconscious in a hospital and is overdosed. I felt awful. I felt very guilty. And I know you can hear that quiver in my voice now, and you could probably like see the tears in my eyes. And I do want you to know, for everyone listening, I'm allowing this rawness to safely be here and express itself out. But also know this is such a great opportunity too, to witness that once you've gone through like a self-forgiveness process, or you practice this process consistently, it doesn't just dissipate. I have identified this and isolated this experience that, you know, I denied his calls. He overdosed the next day. I wasn't there for him when he specifically asked for me and said that he needed me to be. That's what happened. I felt crummy. I felt ashamed. I felt resentful at myself. I felt angry at myself that I didn't take care of myself enough or have all of my resources sorted out to just be at the drop of a dime available for another person. All of those feelings happened. What I learned was that I really honored myself and that I too am not the one responsible for the fate of another person's life. Jake's life was going to play out as a direct result of his actions. I can be an existence and a presence and a love in his life, but I don't get to be the one that chooses the trajectory of it. I can only be responsible for myself. And it did give me a moment to, you know, a bit far removed from the actual presence of that time in September 2021 to also really be proud of myself. Instead of belittling myself for the fact that I didn't have resources then, I'm really proud of myself that I identified the fact that I couldn't engage in a conversation with this person, especially given our history and our family connection and the dysfunction and the addiction. I didn't and do not want that for my created life. And when that was the energy and the embodiment of my family, even though it was my family and my brother, I had to make a choice in that moment, you could say quite literally, to save myself. And even saying that statement kind of makes me feel like almost guilty, because fast forward, I'm the one alive now. Jake is the one physically dead now. Though I share that because you better believe that those, well, you don't have to believe, though I would suggest believing or looking at the direct connection of both of those things. In that moment, I did choose to honor myself and my own boundaries and to create a different reality. I did choose to save myself. I'm still here. Jake had a different reality. 2 months later, Jake did pass away. He did get down to that final moment from drugs that eventually took his life. Now, even in those last final months of his life, I gave him money. I fell for every moment that he, you know, made up some elaborate story. And if you've ever been around anyone who suffers with, you know, addiction or coping through addiction or substances, whatever it may be, you may have noticed how incredible they are at swaying, at convincing, at manipulating. They, by nature, just become so naturally profound at manipulation. Jake could whip up a detailed story about why he suddenly needed $800 for X. And as his little sister who wanted nothing more but to, you know, help him, support him, believe in him, I would fall for it every time. I can look back now and see that there was a knowing in me. There was a ping for sure that I wasn't willing to see. I instead was still in my codependency conditioning. I was still in that dysfunction and I enabled him. No, I'm not responsible for Jake's death. Did I give him money literally in the final days? His last text to me is a message saying, hey, Jen, you know, I really am going to pay you back. I don't want you to think I'm taking advantage of you. Now, the irony of that message is Jake was taking advantage of me. Jake knew he was taking advantage of me. He also is so smart and so wise. He knew that I knew that he was taking advantage of me, which is why he sent that text in the first place. So the money that I gave him, even in the final days up until his death, absolutely 100%, went to the drugs that he purchased that took his life the night that he died. Immediately in the aftermath of Jake's death, there absolutely was so much pain, so much shame, so much belittling. Like, how could you be so stupid? Look at what you do for a living. You're teaching healing and awareness. Like, how could you be so in it that you contributed and enabled so much? Now, your brother's death, and this is the reality. So even though it may seem like as a sister, I had such good intentions to support my brother, to support my family, I 1 month before Jake's death, I bribed my brothers. We'll just call it a bribe. I said, hey, guys, I'll pay for your rent this month because I know that you're struggling. I'll pay for your rent if you come over with me to mom's. I flew home to New York for this. If you come over with me to mom's, to her dilapidated trailer, I'll get us hazmat suits and rent a dumpster to sit outside, and we're going to clean mom's house. Now, dilapidated to the actual state that it's now bulldozed, it doesn't exist. It was uninhabitable. However, because I'm wanting to self-serve, I was wanting to fix and to change so that I could feel better. I can be honest about that. Now, in the moment, I thought, I'm going to save mom. We're doing this all together. We're going to help mom. My mom didn't want saving. She didn't want help. She actually complained and yelled at us the entire time that we're there, wasn't willing to keep any of the cleaning up, didn't want it to happen in the first place. She wanted to be in the dwelling that she was in. She didn't want that interference. It was me and my hope and my need to control the situation that I enabled. I enabled then paying my brothers to come over and help me do something that was so unhealthy and so toxic for us to be doing in that home with our mom. And granted, Jake, who's doing this with us, just got released from the hospital a couple weeks prior from a double pneumonia and from an overdose. The last place in the world that he should have been going back to was the unsafety and the dysfunction of the environment that led to his life of addiction in the first place. Yet, that's what we did. We got hazmat suits, we went to my mom's house, and the three of us cleaned away, throwed everything into a dumpster, only for Jake to die a month later, and now for that house to literally not exist. I have spent the last year going through so much grief, so much identifying of the shame of all of those voices. Jenna, you killed your brother. Even hearing the voice of my mother still alive, connecting the dots. Jenna, how could you deny his phone call? How could you do X? Borderline saying that myself and my twin are the ones directly responsible for Jake's death. These things aren't easy to feel. It'd be much easier in some cases to just look away or to choose to numb it out and to go into a shutdown. And this is why you have moments, even now, almost 2 years later, when I talk of Jake anytime on the podcast, my voice does start to break. It does start to quiver because there's grief there. There's still emotion there to process. And I can see the divine wisdom of that scenario now in retrospect of just how blind I was myself to being so in my own conditioning. I wasn't helping anyone. I was enabling deeply. I was controlling and I was betraying my own self and my own boundaries in addition to the well-being of my family members. I'm not responsible for my family members' well-being. However, my actions absolutely did harm both myself and those around me.
I'm really happy you're bringing up enabling because that's what enabling really is. It's, you know, allowing or participating in another's choices, controlling them, right? Brushing things under the rug to continue to allow patterns that often don't serve either person alive in the relationship itself. And a lot of times we do it because we do feel like we're being well-meaning, well-intentional, even loving in those moments. But I really want to reiterate here how it is none of our responsibilities. We cannot take responsibility for the choices another human makes as an adult. Now, however, going back in time, of course, back to childhood and the many of us who, you know, suffered instances, moments, total childhoods, even of abuse and neglect, I really want to emphasize in childhood, we are not responsible for the choices of other people. It is not our responsibility, how people treated us. Yet I see quite often and used to see in my clients, a lot of embodied responsibility, a lot of in moments where there was abuse or neglect being enacted, a lot of judgment on how we've had to cope or adapt as a result. And what comes to mind, of course, is many different moments or instances of this often comes up in sexual abuse, where survivors well into their adulthood will feel shame for how their bodies maybe naturally responded to these intimate moments in their childhood, will somehow think that they, you know, attracted or, you know, kind of participated in these boundary violations, which they were by no means part of and or giving the idea that they somehow enjoyed this very violating experience. Now, of course, this applies to other instances of abuse and neglect as well, though the reality of it is a lot of us do carry shame for how we've had to adapt to others' choices, which we had no control or impact over in childhood. So I just wanted to, again, emphasize that here. Never are we responsible for another's choices. Never can we be. In adulthood, many of us try to be, though a lot of us hold ourselves accountable for what we've had to do to survive. And really reminding ourselves in the moments while we're talking about self-forgiveness that letting in all of the feelings about what happened, about how we've had to adapt, and allowing in that space for wisdom. I did what I had to do to survive a threatening moment.
There's a word that you use often when you're describing the bringing along of a feeling, and that's carrying. And I love it because you say we're carrying that shame, carrying that emotion. Imagine, or you could visualize that carrying, that's that emotional addiction cycle. The carrying of that shame is actually your body, your physical body, literally, physiologically carrying the sensations, the actual action of that shame in your body. And when we are having that constant loop of a thought, I'm a horrible person, especially if we're unconscious or unaware and we're not paying attention to the thoughts in our head, then even though we're unaware of it, doesn't mean it's not happening. That means that this background, what's become a white noise thought almost of I'm a horrible person, how did that happen? Which is what happens when we aren't yet at a place to forgive, to identify, to feel, to forgive and release, then that thought is there. That chatter is there. We are carrying it. In those thoughts, even if they've now become white noise because they're so constant, every time that thought plays, imagine that thought is an actual like loop in your mind that goes down through your throat into your body, swirling all the way through and back up. It is literally keeping yourself locked in the energetic embodiment of those emotions. So we are literally carrying it. It's why we feel heavy. It's why so many of us feel like the expression, we're carrying the weight of the world on our shoulders. Well, that's that self-blame. The only reason anyone would feel like they're carrying the weight of the world on their shoulders is because somewhere they learn and felt that it is their responsibility to hold the world, which as a child, when you learn that it's your responsibility to hold the world, you're not learning it as, oh, I've got to hold the world, make sure everyone's safe. No, you're learning it as, I have to control the world. It's my responsibility to control and dictate how everyone and everything around me goes. That's not reality. That is just against natural law. So you can imagine when you're sitting in that conditioning and you're carrying those emotions and it's now white noise and we're not identifying it, why we feel so heavy, why we have no resources, we're exhausted, we can't remember things, we're depleted, we have no joy. You can start to connect it all back to this very real learned experience that was learned and absorbed into our physical body. So when you do start to notice that white noise, honor yourself for noticing it. That's a huge moment to just celebrate. It's massive that you are even willing to notice that it's there, because noticing that it's there comes with that second step of allowing yourself to then feel what's there. And maybe you notice what's there and you're not ready to feel it. You're not willing to feel it. That's okay. Even on celebrate that about yourself. Oh my gosh, I noticed it. I hooked into and intercepted that thought for the first time. Whew, that was a lot. I'm not going to go through the process of grief and all of this heartache right now. Nope. I just noticed it. Go me. Let that be. Maybe you notice it 50 times before you even move into allowing yourself to process and feel. That's okay. But know that that is the next step, the actual feeling of it. And then the learning, this part is crucial. Without the reflection of that learned wisdom, which can only happen when you've identified the event, identified how you felt, and then allowed yourself to actually feel the feelings, then you can reflect on what you've learned about it. Then when that event starts to play in your mind again, or that shaming, or, oh my God, Jenny, you killed your brother, I can hook right back in with what I learned from that and the gentle, loving, wise reminder to myself that I am not responsible for the life of another human being. Now, I know for all of you who are parents out there, I understand you are responsible for the beings of the little ones in your care. Absolutely. This is a different conversation. I'm not responsible for the life choices that another adult makes. And that isn't always the easiest thing to swallow, but I will tell you what's harder than accepting that is living a life in denial of that and believing that the weight of the world is in my controls and that it is in fact my responsibility. Because when I do that, I'm not living in my own authentic essence. And I also am not allowing in any way the possibility for anyone around me to be expressed as their own beautiful self. I can't hold space for anyone because I'm not willing to actually see myself or anyone else in objective reality.
As I imagine is clear for those of you listening, both Jenna and myself, as we had emotion come up, as we each shared our moments of self-forgiveness, I really want to emphasize again, bringing this back full circle, how much of a process this really is, how much of the upset is still alive in both of us. Actually, after we kind of shifted and you were speaking a bit, I was sitting here and my right eye started to, did you see it? That's so funny. My right eye started to do a twitchy thing. And I think it's because I didn't allow myself to have, or filming a podcast, I didn't allow myself to have the full emotional experience. And I think that was my nervous system literally still twitching, feeling the emotions still alive within me. So as soon as we hit close on this podcast, I am definitely going to go take a few moments and be in those emotions. And emphasizing that to also emphasize our always suggestion, which is these are beautiful moments to begin to practice compassion. When we're having upset feelings, especially for those of us who didn't have the space for them in our childhood, those are the moments where we can shame ourselves, guilt ourselves, tell us all of the reasons why we shouldn't be feeling what we're feeling. And those are the moments where we can expand a bit and begin to, because compassion also is not a, you know, overnight experience, though if the more present we are with our emotions over time, the more then compassionate we can be for our life experiences. So it is through those moments where we begin to practice in small ways, we can begin to embody that which is self-forgiveness. As always, we'd love to hear from you. What is coming up as you're hearing our own journeys in self-forgiveness, as you're thinking about or observing your own moments where you might need or want to gift yourself with this life-changing practice. We'd love to hear from you in the comments if you're watching on our YouTube, or the comments across any of our social media, really at this point. And as always, looking forward to continuing the conversation with you during next episode.